We saw the biblical context of Abraham's call in our first session. As we continue his story, we come to God's call itself. First of all, it was a call to Abraham. Genesis 12 again, verses 2 and 3. I, God says, will make you, that's Abram, a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. The call was specifically to Abraham while he was still living with his father and extended family in Ur, present-day southern Iraq near the Persian Gulf. Ur was an astonishingly advanced city of its time, perhaps 250,000 population. Well-developed cultural, business, and educational life, they understood mathematics at a high level and could calculate square and cube roots without calculators. Abraham's home was a sophisticated, literate, comfortable, and quite luxurious city. Leaving here for the uncertainties of a much more primitive land would have been very difficult. Abraham's first 60 years were lived in Ur. His family were idol worshippers, as Joshua 24 verse 2 tells us. These idols likely included Nana, the moon goddess, patron deity of Ur. But God spoke to Abraham there and gave him the original call and promise. So the whole family headed off for Canaan and got as far as Haran. Ur and Haran were two of the three greatest centers of trade in Mesopotamia. One might compare them to present-day New York and Los Angeles. In Acts chapter 7, verses 2 to 4, Stephen said, "Brothers and fathers, listen to me. The God of glory," a unique title used only one other time in the entire Bible, that's in Psalm 29, verse 3. Stephen continues, "The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham while he was still in Mesopotamia, before he lived in Haran. Leave your country and your people, God said, and go to the land I will show you." So he left the land of the Chaldeans and settled in Haran. This family settled there at Haran for 15 years until their father, Terah, died. During these years, Abram perhaps found himself caught between cultural expectations, looking after his aging father, and God's call. Because Abram left Haran and finally headed off to the Promised Land the year his father died. God told Abraham to leave his home to go to a place that I will show you. He didn't know what it looked like. He didn't know where it was. He'd never been there before. But the critical question was not where, but who. Who would show him where to go? And God had said, I will show you. Ben Patterson wrote, "To follow Christ has always been a journey without maps, but it has always been a journey with Him." God's guidance in our lives may seem mapless too, but He provides something better. He goes with us. Remember, God's call, even with Abraham, was primarily to a relationship, not to a place. George MacDonald, in his book The Gentlewoman's Choice, wrote that having an interest in God is a very different thing from living in a close relationship with the Father. Concerning one of his characters, MacDonald said, "He was so busy understanding with his intellect that he missed the better understanding of heart and imagination. He was always so pleased with the thought of a thing that he missed the thing itself, whose possession, not its thought, is essential." God calls us not to theology or head knowledge about Him, but to a living relationship with Him. And so we see a call to leave. The original call given to Abram in Ur is reiterated for us in the first three verses of chapter 12. It was a threefold call to leave country, people, and father's household. All three were natural sources of security for someone like ancient Abram. Country and land, this spoke of his nationality. People or clan, this provided personal identity and security. And father's household, which gave him the right to inheritance, economic security, family blessing. There is a price to pay in embracing God's call and following Him. Thirdly, there's a promise to claim. There's another side to the picture. God gave him a threefold promise, a promise of land, of a nation, descendants, and one special descendant in particular, and then worldwide blessing. Significantly, these three specific promises relate to or parallel the three things he was called to sacrifice. If Abraham would leave his country, God would give him his own country or land. If Abraham would leave his people and clan, God would give him an entire nation of people. If Abram would leave his father's household and blessing, God would bless him beyond imagination. God's precondition to the promise is a call to leave our natural sources of security. There is a price to pay. Bill Arnold wrote, "The earthly things to which we cling in our desperate search for security and comfort are actually the very things that get in the way of true security." John Stott calls these first four verses of Genesis 12 the most unifying text in the Bible. God's whole purpose is encapsulated in it. This first narrative concerning Abraham teaches us how to discover true security in life. Responding to God's call will mean turning away from all that we naturally lean on for security and putting our trust and faith in an unseen God and His unseen promises. Such renunciation is not popular in our modern cultures, which puts a premium on self-indulgence. You owe it to yourself. But in Luke 9:24, Jesus said, "Whoever loses his life for my sake will save it, but whoever insists on keeping his life will lose it." Martin Luther once said, "I have held many things in my hands and have lost them all, but whatever I have placed in God's hands, that I still possess." So the story of Abraham constantly revolves around the significant double theme of promise and faith. God makes a promise. People are called to respond to that promise with faith. Here, God makes a promise to Abraham, which will result in a new community. Abraham then responds to this promise with faith. He embraces the call of God. So Abraham left or went, as verse 4 tells us, and verse 4 is an absolutely crucial verse in the history of faith. His going was an evidence of his faith in the promise of God. He believed the promise, he obeyed, he went, he asked no questions. Hebrews 11 verse 8 tells us, "By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going." Abraham has a genuine faith. His going in response to God's command and promise proves it so. This promise-faith theme is not something restricted to Abraham. It is a theme which reverberates down through all of history and lands right here today, wherever you are as you catch this session online. Galatians 3 verse 8 says, "The Scripture foresaw that God would justify the Gentiles by faith and announced the gospel in advance to Abraham. All nations will be blessed through you." In other words, the promise is the gospel. Galatians also speaks about this combination theme of promise and faith. Let's go back to Genesis 12, pick it up at verse 6. "Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem as far as the terebinth tree of Morah, and the Canaanites were then in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, 'To your descendants I will give this land.' And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. And he moved from there to the mountain east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. So Abram journeyed, going on still toward the south." This is the first time we see God speaking to Abraham since that original call in Ur many years earlier. Now that Abraham is in the heart of the promised land, God specifies his promise to him concerning the land. It will belong to Abraham's offspring. Abram marks this appearance from God with the building of his first altar to the Lord, indicating a complete transition from idolatry to worshiping the one true God. Then he moved on to Bethel, built another altar there, and called on the name of the Lord. This Hebrew phrase means to turn to the one named as the single referent of life, not trusting in any other. We find the first occurrence of this phrase back in Genesis chapter 4, verse 26. In the time of Seth's son Enosh, men began to call on the name of the Lord. So Abraham is in a faithful line for whom worship is natural and essential. That line extends down to you and me, for whom worship ought to be equally important. Eugene Peterson wrote, "The work of worship gathers together everything in our common lives that has been dispersed by sin, and brings it to attention before God. At the same time, it gathers everything in God's revelation that has been forgotten in our distracted hurrying, and puts it before us so that we can offer it up in praise and obedience. All of this does not take place merely in a single hour of worship, but faithfully repeated week after week, year after year, there is an accumulation to wholeness."